Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we talk to Major Scott Roweeder from the Minnesota National Guard about the National Guard's state mission. We also talk to the Adjutant General, thanks military families on Generally Speaking, and Major Darren Janish joins us to talk about Family Prep Academy. And finally, we take a look at the Minnesota during World War I with Doug Becky. All this and more on today's Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcasts of today's show and all our shows on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. This week, Major Scott Roweeder joins us. He is the Interagency Operation Officer for the Minnesota National Guard. Major Roweeder, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for having me here.
Major, that's a pretty interesting title, Interagency Operations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard. Can you tell me what that entails?
Yes, sir. I work in St. Paul at the Joint Operations Center for the Minnesota National Guard, and that's kind of the nucleus of everything that occurs within the Minnesota National Guard as far as the current situation and working with Homeland Security and Emergency Management. So within that that role, I am the interagency officer that works in direct correlation with Homeland Security Emergency Management in preparation for any state active duty missions. And I also work with all the 87 county sheriffs and county emergency managers preparing for any types of emergencies that may occur and making sure our units are prepped and trained for those missions.
Major, we've learned on past shows that the Minnesota National Guard has a federal mission and a state mission. Can you tell our listeners what the state missions might involve?
Well, the motto for the Minnesota National Guard is citizen soldiers always ready. So what we need to do is make sure we're always prepared for any kind of active duty mission that the governor deems necessary for the Minnesota National Guard to do in protection of the civilians throughout the state of Minnesota.
And can you give us some examples of some missions that have occurred over the last couple of years?
Sure. Well, basically, when directed by the governor, the Minnesota National Guard can perform just about any mission assigned. So in the past, the Minnesota National Guard has performed state active duty missions in support of floods, tornadoes. We've done search and rescue missions, emergency shelter missions, logistical support system missions, hazmat missions. A few years back, during the state employee strike, we actually helped out at the VA nursing homes as part of the state active duty mission. And also some of the major state events, most recently the Republican National Convention, where we actually provided some security support with the local officials there. The Minnesota National Guard also has three QRF units, or Quick Reaction Force units, and one Rapid Reaction Force unit that are geographically located around the state of Minnesota that are capable of responding and assisting in emergencies as directed by the proper authorities to promote stability and security throughout the state.
Major, what does it take to call up the Minnesota National Guard for a state mission?
Well, first and foremost, we need a governor's executive order. The governor is the only one that can activate the Minnesota National Guard. The activation process actually starts with any one of the 87 county sheriffs or mayors from the city of a first class identifying a specific need for assistance for the National Guard. City of the first class, we have three of them. That's Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. The sheriff will then contact the Minnesota duty officer located in St. Paul and provide the five W's, the who, what, when, where, and why of the mission. So, for example, for a flood, we've got to find out who's requesting the support, which sheriff or which mayor of the city, the first class, what flooding has occurred, what's the forecast for the area, are there any structures, personnel, or major roadways that are affected? What protective measures are in place, what specific assets are being requested. So we need to know, do we need to provide checkpoints? Do we need to provide security patrols? Do we need engineer support? We need to know when the flooding began, when the rivers are expected to crest, what rivers are affected, what towns are affected. and basically what's the cause. And we know for like a flood, it's we typically have some heads up on that, knowing that it's caused by heavy rains or heavy snowfall that's starting to melt. But in some of the other incidents that we have, we might not know the cause, and we need that for our proper planning and preparation. The Minnesota duty officer will then contact Homeland Security Emergency Management with the request, at which time they'll review the request and ensure that it exceeds the local and state agency's capabilities, and contact the Minnesota National Guard Joint Operations Center, where I work. The notification of the JOC of an impending mission prior to the execution of the governor's executive order enables the National Guard to initiate the planning process and notify our unit leadership of the potential activations. Once we do actually receive a governor's executive order, the National Guard units are placed in the state active duty orders and support the requesting counties. The Minnesota National Guard will have military liaisons, like myself, that are in continuous contact with the requesting sheriffs and with Homeland Security Emergency Management in order to identify the mission requirements and maintain our proper military chain of command.
We're speaking with Major Scott Roweeder, the Interagency Operations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Major, with all of those, all that information that you need when you're deployed on a flood, that doesn't sound like it's a rapid response.
Our goal is to have a unit on the ground within 12 hours. Our planning factors are anywhere from 12 to 24 hours. But again, with our if it's a quick, immediate need, we have the quick reaction force that can be on the ground within 6 hours.
Part of the criteria for the governor when he calls you up is that be a circumstance where local authorities can't handle the situation. Are there special criteria for that?
That is correct. It's typically, that's why it goes through the county sheriffs for the request, because they need to ensure that all the local agencies and response forces within the county are exhausted first before they'll actually send the request up through the duty officer and through Homeland Security Emergency Management to the governor.
Now, once you've got your troops called up, what happens when you're activated? What's the next step?
Well, the units, once we actually get the mission, the units actually keep a very accurate contact information for all their soldiers assigned. So prior to and leading up to the events, we typically know if it's like a flood event, we know that there's going to be some flooding taking place. So the units will actually start contacting their soldiers a little bit early just to ensure they know which soldiers are available for the mission. Once we receive the governor's executive order, they'll actually do a call-up of those soldiers, and the soldiers will report to the unit and actually start doing their orders preparation, their equipment preparation, and getting ready to depart for the actual location where the mission's going to take place. At that time, liaisons such as myself make contact with the county sheriffs and figure out where the requests are needed, the locations, so that when the unit arrives, they link up with the liaisons, and we make contact with them and make sure that they are introduced to the county sheriff. They know what the missions are. They know what the requests are.
And Major, what organizations do you partner with on state active duty? And after you get the sheriff and the guard and everybody else there, who's in charge?
Well, overall in the counties, the county sheriffs are in charge. They understand, they know the full situation of what's going on. The military is always in a support role. We're in support of the local authorities on site. So anytime we show up, the county sheriffs work with the liaisons who report back to the State Emergency Operations Center, and we continue to receive the guidance on what the new missions are, and we put together new mission plans. And as long as Homeland Security Emergency Management is working in conjunction with the governor, we can continue to add soldiers to the mission and equipment.
Major, it seems like all too often, the National Guard has historically been called on to provide support up in the Red River Valley.
Yes, sir.
What challenges does that present to your troops?
Well, one of the biggest challenges we have on a state active duty mission is, of course, safety of all of our soldiers and airmen. So historically, when we provide support at the Red River Valley, the soldiers perform duties 24 hours a day in all types of weather. Our soldiers are always working in high water areas, running security patrols and doing certain checkpoints. So we got to make sure that the soldiers are always using buddy teams. Leaders are ensuring that they have proper rest cycles and that the soldiers have the proper personal protective equipment. Another challenge is the civilians that are affected in the areas tend to assume the National Guard has a more authority in a flood situation than we really do. We'll get approached by civilians and city officials from smaller towns that'll actually ask soldiers or leaders of the units if they can help support their areas. And what we need to do is just really educate them on the site that they need to work through their local emergency managers up through the county sheriff so that we can make sure we maintain the proper chain of command.
So, Major, would it be correct to assume that it's your job as interagency ops officer to coordinate with the sheriff and everybody else that's on site?
Yes, sir. That's correct. We do have regional liaisons also throughout the state that can assist in those objectives.
Sounds like a very important job, Major. Keep doing a great job.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Major, thanks for joining us. That was Major Scott Roeder of the Interagency Operations Officer of the Minnesota National Guard. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Today, I want to recognize the family members who support our service members. It is often said it is much easier for a service member to deploy than for the family member to stay at home. There is great truth to that. The service member may feel overwhelmed with all the checklist items they need to complete prior to leaving. Some of these items include packing for the deployment and conducting training to fine-tune their tactical skills to smaller items such as filling a prescription or having their vehicle serviced. But once they leave, their focus is the mission and the family of the military members they are bound to during the duration of the deployment. When they depart, this is where the strength of the military family members shine. For the spouse, whether you work in or outside of the home, your workload increases tremendously. Now you're taking on everything that your spouse did while at home. You are the employee or employer, caregiver, house cleaner, bill payer, cook, and all the other duties required to keep a household running. It's one thing to do this over a weekend, but now you may be required to do this for an entire year. We want you to know you don't have to do it all. Please visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. On this website is located the Minnesota Military Family Care Initiative. Counties, communities, organizations, and businesses have offered services to support you. The Military Family Care Initiative is there to ease the difficulty for your family before, during, and after a deployment. Don't be afraid to ask for help. I encourage you to reach out. Family members, you have and continue to be a source of great strength from which we draw. It is not easy being away and deeply missing all the comforts of home, but you have made it easier for us to do what we need to do. We draw on you for emotional support to get us through the times when we question the challenges we face. In our darkest moments, it is you we hold in our hearts and wait for the day to be reunited. For this, we are extremely grateful. Thank you for your service. Service members, don't forget to thank your spouses, children, parents, and extended family for their service. You had the choice to sign a contract with the military. By default, your family members signed the contract also. Little did they know the holidays, birthdays, anniversaries, and special occasions which would be missed by your military duty. Take the time to recognize them for their sacrifices and support. Family members, we salute you.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Each week we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. This week, Major Darren Janis joins us. He is a battalion operations officer in the Minnesota National Guard. Major, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, thank you for having me.
Major, understand that you will be deploying this spring, and this will be your fourth deployment?
Yes, it will be my third with the Guard, my third with the Guard, and then I had one previous one with active duty.
Major, how are you and your family dealing with all of these deployments?
Well, we're hanging in there. A lot of what you're talking about today, the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program and the resources that are provided, it really helps my family get ready for the deployment, helps them during the deployment while I'm gone, and then really has, especially the last time we came back, really provided some good resources on the reintegration piece and returning back to Minnesota and being reintegrated back into what you would try to consider a normal life again.
Well, I understand, Major, this weekend Rochester families are attending a Family Preparation Academy. Can you tell our listeners what that's about?
The Family Preparation Academy is actually a newer program that was added a couple of years ago, and it really helps in the families addressing prior to deployment the things that they can start thinking about. And there are a host of workshops that parents, spouses that can go to with the soldier, and then also there are group kids activities so that are age appropriate in nature that can help kids begin to figure out ways that they are going to be able to cope with the parent absence during the deployment. There are things for couples growing marriages, how to stay in contact, assistance or techniques or ideas on, you know, raising a child or children as a single parent now while your significant other's deployed. So that's what the soldiers and their family members will be doing this weekend in Rochester, is just going through and speaking really with the experts and the vendors that are there to provide the subject matter expertise in helping these families prepare for an overseas deployment.
So this is your troops and the families that have been alerted to deployment that will be attending the Family Preparation Academy?
Yes, the soldier side-by-side with their family member.
Major, is this part of the training that you give the family that's left behind on what to do if they need some help? Do you get into those issues?
Yes, most definitely. And that's one of the big things about it is something as simple as maybe a mom or a husband with four kids and, you know, 17 inches of snow falls and they've got to go somewhere and they don't have the time. Resources, somebody come shovel their driveway, something as simple as that, to my son's having trouble in school with the deployment and it's affecting his schoolwork. What are some of the avenues that I can take to help him out? And, you know, representatives from MNSCU and the Minnesota Education Department are there so that a parent who may be experiencing that while their significant other is deployed knows who or where they can start the process and finding some assistance for an issue like that.
And Major, if they do have some kind of issue, where's the first place they go? Is that a family readiness officer?
Yeah, one of the first things at right at each unit level is a family readiness group. It's a group of family members of that specific unit, all volunteer, tremendous people who are there to do the initial first assistance for the families. Most of them know each other from unit interactions and unit functions, and so they feel comfortable most of the time coming to a fellow person who's experiencing some of the same issues they are. And then that's the first step in the chain. And then it goes from there all the way up to folks that are at a battalion level that can assist, up through the various levels of command, all the way to the state, and then at the national level.
We're speaking with Major Darren Janish, Battalion Operations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Major, you alluded to a number of deployments. Where have you been and where are you headed next?
Well, I've spent, as luck would have it, most of my time in the Middle East. Started out a long time ago with Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And then right now, I believe we'll be heading out as part of the 1st Brigade Combat Team over to the in support of Operation New Dawn. Where specifically we'll fall, we're not quite sure yet, but it'll be somewhere in, obviously, the CENTCOM Theater of Operations, Iraq, Kuwait, somewhere in there.
Major, with all of those deployments under your belt and another one coming up, just how important do you think it is to prepare the soldiers, spouses, children, parents of the soldiers deploying, and why?
I think it's vitally important. It strikes at the core of what we do as an organization, because first and foremost, we're in the people business. That's who we're made up of. And the better, you know, we and this is my opinion only, but historically, and by historically, I mean much previous to 9/11, you know, we do a tremendous job in the organization of preparing for deployments. Our soldiers are well prepared to execute their jobs, whether it be as an infantryman, an artilleryman, a tanker, a personnelist, whatever it is. They are very good at their jobs and what they do. What we came to realize is that where we were lacking was in preparing them for the emotional and physical hardships of a deployment separate from doing their normal job, and that, you know, looking at the soldier from a holistic point of view. And so these programs that are in place not only help prepare the soldier and their family for the upcoming deployment, it also really helps reintegrate that family unit and really get them prepared for the next time that soldier has to go back out the door. So we see less and less of a cumulative effect in this state right now of persistent conflict. You know, we're mitigating some of the risks that we may have assumed had these programs not been in place.
Major, we just got a minute left, but as battalion operations officer, you've got to feel really good about all the training on the way out on deployments and the reintegration training coming back.
Yeah, it does, and I can tell you that it gives the command at all levels a level of comfort, knowing that time and resources are dedicated to a very important issue to them, which is, you know, the soldier family team and that soldier family well-being.
Major, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Major Darren Janish, a battalion operations officer in the Minnesota National Guard. We've linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. On the night before Christmas Eve, the Old Navy in Edina was open around the clock and offered a special deal to service members and their families. For Sergeant Troy Williams, who needed a few last-minute things for his two boys, the 15% coupon he received meant more than a few bucks off his last purchase of the season. Standing in line waiting to check out, Troy noticed what was written on the coupon. It said, "Thank you for all you do to serve and protect our communities." When he presented the coupon to the cashier, she repeated that simple message with a big smile. That coupon wasn't intended to save Sergeant Williams hundreds of dollars. Rather, it was an opportunity for local business and its employees to show their appreciation for the work Troy had done while in the service. For Troy, the moment of recognition he received made him proud to have served his country and live in a caring community. And that's the real reason for offering a military discount. It provides a moment for individuals to say thank you and for service members to acknowledge the community's appreciation. Thank you, Old Navy, for showcasing how Minnesotans can strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. After the break, we visit the Commissioner's Corner and hear from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs next on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo.
This week was a busy week at the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. In addition to wrapping up a successful year, we welcomed our new governor and jumped right into the 2011 state legislative session. And I don't think things will slow down anytime soon. Our legislature, with many new members, will be busy working to balance the largest state budget deficit in Minnesota history. During this transition period, we will work with the County Veteran Service Officers, Commander's Task Force, and United Veterans Legislative Council to educate our state leaders on MDVA and how we all work together to assist Minnesota's heroes. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is a unique state agency because of our nonpartisan nature. We're looking forward to building new relationships on both sides of the aisle. As a country and as a state, we have made certain commitments to our veterans. It is important that we keep good on those promises. After all, the life of every single American has been affected by the service of a veteran. Yet the VA estimates that only 40% of veterans come forward to claim benefits they've earned. In Minnesota, we have just under 400,000 veterans statewide. It is crucial that we reach these individuals and let them know what they've earned through their service to this country. Our 5 state veterans homes are another example of this commitment that we as a nation have made to our heroes. Finally, I'd like to bid a fond farewell to our outgoing Commissioner, Michael Pugliese. Commissioner Pugliese was truly able to make a difference during his more than 10 years with the department. As a Marine, he lived the Marine philosophy, improvise, adapt, and overcome. He has understood the importance of partnership and collaborations. Not only is it more effective than going it alone, it is just a smart way to do business. Commissioner Pugliese was passionate about avoiding duplication of services, creating efficiencies, and ensuring we provide the very best service possible to veterans and their families. His work, together with our partners, helped make Minnesota one of the most veteran-friendly states in the nation. He worked to better the lives of veterans and their families, and we are committed to continuing that good work into the future.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. Each week, we explore the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to serving Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and their survivors by securing benefits provided by federal and state laws. This week, Anna Lewicki-Long joins us. She is a captain in the Minnesota National Guard, and she is the communications director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ms. Long, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
I understand we're going to be talking about the Support Our Troops license plate program today.
That's right. It's important that we can keep this license plate on the forefront of Minnesotans, you know, across the state. We really want to make sure they're aware that this is an option when you are looking to do any type of license plate.
Now, this was established by the legislature, and who's eligible to buy these plates?
And that's such a good point, Tom, because a lot of people think you have to be a veteran or you have to be in the military to have these plates. But these plates are really designed or were designed as a way to show your support for those who serve. And so one of sort of the slogans that we have adopted for this program is, you know, if they're willing to wear the uniform, shouldn't we be willing to wear these on our car? So again, it's just a way to show your support without saying a word for Minnesota's heroes.
So this isn't just for veterans, it's for all of the citizens of Minnesota if they want to support our troops and their families.
Absolutely.
Look into buying a Support Our Troops license plate. Now, where can they do that?
There's more information on our website. So visit minnesotaveteran.org. You'll see a picture of the license plate. So you can select that and you'll find out more information. But one thing I'd like to point out is that these are available for vehicles and motorcycles. So if you have a motorcycle, don't think that you're left out of the group on this. And you can, when you're buying a new vehicle, be sure to ask your dealership about it. Very often you can get these plates straight from the dealers as well.
We're speaking with Anna Lewicki-Long, the Communications Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Mr. Captain Long, I see there's a $30 annual fee. Can you tell me how that money is used?
Yes, and I'd also like to just quickly point out that that's a minimum contribution. We have, many folks who, out of generosity, have actually dedicated more than that $30 to go towards this important fund. This money is split evenly between the Department of Military Affairs and the Department of Veterans Affairs, and it's used in many different ways. I'll just give you a few highlights. This money benefits the CORE program, which provides family counseling with specialty services for children. children, financial counseling, debt management, things that will help our service members that have faced challenges due to deployment or military service. It provides emergency financial assistance. It provides grants to veterans and their families that are in need. It is used to help secure shelter for homeless veterans across the state and also access to benefits for them. We also use it for outreach to communities across Minnesota and on seminars for health conditions associated with military service. So there's just a whole variety of ways this money is used. And with the budget deficit that we're facing, everything that we can do to secure funding that we have is crucially important. This the sale of this plate has really leveled off for us since it was launched in 2005, and we're very hopeful that, this new push will help us increase sales of the plate.
Now, just to clarify, these funds not only support our current troops, but they support our veterans as well.
Absolutely. And all the programs that I mentioned are available for current service members as well as veterans and their families in many cases.
Captain Long, there's a number of different license plates out there, such as the Vietnam plates that I utilize. Can you tell us about some of the others and what are the differences between them?
Sure. And I have Support Our Troops license plates on my vehicles. I'm a veteran, but I wanted to do it to show support and, of course, to support the department. The plate you just mentioned, Tom, as well as, for example, the Gold Star Mother plates, the Gulf War veteran plates, those are specific. You have to actually fulfill a certain criteria to be eligible for those plates. With the Support Our Troops plates, they are available to every Minnesotan. And again, it's a really strong way to show support for veterans, military, and the service that they have, that they've accomplished.
So how long ago did the Support Our Troops license plate program start, and how many have been sold?
This program actually started in 2005, and it was really focused on outreach and funding for underserved veterans around the state. The first year, just to give you an example of, you know, I mentioned this plate sale has leveled off, and just to give you an example, when it launched, we had 13,000 plates sold that first year. And in last year, only 4,000. So again, we really want to make sure that Minnesotans are aware of this and they can make that decision to, you know, purchase and support troops if they're able to.
I understand you have some new marketing initiatives that you're working on to help promote the sale of these plates.
We do. If you visit your DMV or dealership, you might look around and see we have a poster. We have some brochures, magnets, buttons. Again, we want to really keep this in the forefront. And I have to give a shout out to Fuzzy Duck Design Studio. They have done all this work pro bono, a local design firm, veteran owned. So a big thank you to them.
So when our listeners are renewing their old plates or buying a new car, think about Support Our Troop plates. Ms. Long, thanks for joining us on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you for having me.
That was Anna Lewicki-Long, the Communications Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We have links to more information on the Support Our Troops license plate program on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. To find out more about the programs provided by the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, go to MinnesotaVeteran.org or call 1-888-LINK-VET. When we return, we'll take a look at Minnesota during World War I. That's next here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. This week, Doug Becky joins us. He is the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum and a fellow Vietnam veteran. Doug Becky, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Some of our listeners may not be familiar with Minnesota during World War I. Can you tell us a little bit about how our relatives and friends participated in World War I?
Sure. Well, we'll go into the organization of the units before the war. They trained originally, before the war, they trained at Camp Lakeview, which was on Lake Pepin, and there were three regiments of infantry, the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. They were carrying on the traditions of the legacy of the militia regiments from the Civil War. There was also one battalion of artillery that was expanded to a regiment in 1916. In 1903, there was also the Naval Militia. The Naval Militia was established in 1903. They trained on the ship the Gopher, which sailed out of Duluth on 15-day annual cruises on the Great Lakes. By 1917, they had 28 officers and 511 enlisted men. The National Defense Act of 1916 made the Guard part of the U.S. Army when federalized for the first time, thus reducing the state's control and responsibilities for federalized units. But it also increased federal support for the units.
Mr. Becky, what was the political climate in Minnesota at the time of the war in Europe, and did it change over those years?
Oh, it changed over the years, but at the start of the war, most people wanted to stay out. But various ethnic groups in the state still had strong sympathies to the ancestral homelands, and so you'd find the German newspapers supporting the Germans. Other ethnic groups, if they had a French connection, would support the French, but predominantly a lot of people sided with the Allies, the British and the French, more than the Germans.
And as the war progressed, how did that change?
Well, here at Camp Ripley, we have copies of the Minneapolis German language newspaper. And if you read the 1914 editions, it's all support the Kaiser, support the fatherland, help the German cause on. And by 1918, it's all we're Yankee Doodle Dandies, and we support the red, white, and blue. So the attitudes had to change for a while. But also British propaganda was much more effective than German propaganda, and so the British and the Allies were much more effective at winning American support than the German side was.
We're speaking with Doug Becky of the Minnesota Military Museum on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Mr. Becky, I understand there were Minnesota National Guard units sent to the Mexican border in 1916. Can you tell us what they did there?
Right. Well, Mexico had been involved in a civil war for a number of years, and trouble was spreading north across the border. So National Guard units from across the unit were federalized and sent down there to restore order. Minnesota's 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Infantry Regiments and the 1st Field Artillery were sent to Llano Grande, Texas. They saw no combat, but they trained for 7 months, and the training was much needed by them. They came home in the winter of 1917. And during this period, tensions have been building with Germany. Tensions have been building since 1914. And again, as I said earlier, British propaganda was a lot more effective than the German propaganda. And the Germans came to be regarded as the brutish aggressors. Also, the United States intercepted a telegram between the German government and the Mexican government, where the Germans were trying to encourage the Mexicans to come into the war on their side if America entered the war. And as a reward, the Mexicans would Mexico would receive the southwestern United States as a reward for their participation in the war against the United States. That was the Zimmerman telegram. On the 3rd of February 1917, diplomatic relations were broken off, and then on the 6th of April 1917, war was declared on Germany.
Mr. Becky, I understand some of today's units have ties to those units that were involved in World War I. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's right. They came back from the Mexican border and almost immediately were refederalized for world service in World War I. And the units received new federal designation. There was a whole new framework that was established for all the militia units from around the country to be incorporated into the new federal divisional system. So the 1st Minnesota Infantry became the 135th Regiment, the 2nd Regiment became the 136th Regiment, and the 3rd Infantry Regiment became the 125th Field Artillery and 125th Machine Gun Battalion. Now, the 135th, 136th, 125th still exists today. Also, the 1st Field Artillery became the 151st Field Artillery, which still exists today.
Fascinating. Mr. Becky, we're about out of time. I'd like to thank you for joining us.
Sure. Thank you very much.
We've linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Now let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, please submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio today is the Chief of Communications and Marketing for Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Sergeant First Class Melanie Nelson. Melanie, welcome to the show, and what's in the mailbag?
Hi,
today?
Tom. Well, let me just reach my hand in here and grab the next letter. This one says, we are a relatively small company in Minnesota, and we want to offer a discount to military families, but we have a few questions. First, how do we go about, how do we get the service members to present an ID? What does an ID look like? And do family members have an ID? Second, what kind of trends do you see in discounts? Are they generally 10% off or 25% off, 50% off? And finally, how do we go about informing service members about our discount? Well, boy, those are a few great questions, Tom.
Good questions. I hear them from people every day that want to do something to help and said, can I give discounts? So I'm waiting with bated breath to hear the answers.
Well, the first question they have is about an ID. And, you know, Tom, we see it go a lot of different ways. Many companies who offer discounts don't make the military service members present an ID. And actually, we at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon appreciate that because some family members don't have them or they don't have it readily available. If you need an ID shown, that is completely up to you. But we've seen through the people in our office that people are pretty honest here in Minnesota. If it's for military families, they'll be honest about it. Secondly, it says what percentage? And boy, that's all over the map too, Tom. 25% off is a pretty common discount that we see. It's always nice when there's free offers, which around the spring here, we have some free offers that we know are coming up for our military families, and we appreciate those so much for our families. Now, the last question, how do we go about informing service members about our offer? And I have a fantastic answer for that one, Tom. We have our website, as you know, beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and we have an events and deals page where we post different discounts all the time right on our website. And so if you are a company that wants to offer a discount to a military family, I invite you to email us through the website at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and we'll post that. Or you can also visit the Military Family Care Initiative site and post your offer up there as well. And there's a link to that site right on our homepage.
So if any of those businesses out there want to give discounts, go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org, which we've said so many times on this program.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it, and we would be happy to pass on that information to our service members.
Melanie, thanks for joining us with that question of the week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melanie. If you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at minnesotamilitaryradiohour.com, and let us know what's on your mind. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our JET guests for joining us this week, Majors Scott Rowiter and Darren Janish from the Minnesota National Guard, Captain Anna Lewicki-Long from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Doug Becky from the Minnesota Military Museum, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we continue with Minnesota's history in World War I. That's right here next Sunday morning at 7 on News Talk 100.3 FM. Thank you for joining us today for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. If you have questions for our mailbag, or if you want to check out this podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at the MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.